Hi, welcome to the latest podcast from the Chamber's Local Skills Improvement Plan team. I'm Jo, I'm the Communications and Engagement Manager for the plan. And just for those of you who may not be familiar with the Local Skills Improvement Plan, or LSIP, the Chamber is delivering this on behalf of the Department for Education. And our remit is to identify and prioritise the skill shortages affecting businesses in all sectors and areas of Greater Manchester. Then we put these priorities to colleges and skills providers to ensure there are courses and training programmes available to help upskill individuals and essentially give businesses the skills they need to grow. So one of the areas we focused on whilst gathering this data from employers as part of the research revolves around electrical trades and technical engineering work. And I am delighted to be joined by some experts in this field discuss it further. So our guests today include Andrew Eldred, who is the Chief Operating Officer at the Electrical Contractors Association, or ECA. We have Matt Longworth, who is the Operations Director at the 24/7 Group. And we have Subra Krishnan Harihara, who is the Deputy Director of Research at Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce. So welcome, everybody, and thank you very much for joining us today. Andrew, should we start with you? Can you tell us a bit about the ECA and the work you do for your members, please?
Yeah, as you say, ECA stands for Electrical Contractors Association. So we represent electrical contractors. We're a trade association. We've been around for quite a while, 1901. We've got 2,500 member firms, about 100 of them in the Greater Manchester area, and the vast majority of them are SME. In terms of what we exist to do, we offer our members a range of services, so business support services around employment advice, commercial, legal advice, health and safety, technical guidance. We also represent their views and interests, both in an industry level, so a lot of the technical standards in the electrical world, we input into that on behalf of our members, but also externally as well. So a national level in terms of what the apprenticeship looks like, the electrician apprenticeship looks like, but also at a local level in the skills area, increasingly we're getting involved in local issues, such as the local skills improvement plans. A couple of other things to mention. Makes us a little bit different, probably. We still have a very close relationship with the Unite Trade Union, which represents employees. So through them, we negotiate a collective agreement that determines terms and conditions of employment for electricians across the UK. That's called the Joint Industry Board. We're involved also with the union when it comes to the card scheme that we use in our part of industry. A lot of people would have heard of a CSCS card. Yes. To help you get access to construction sites. Well, for electricians and other electrotechnical occupations, there's an ECS card, which is aligned with CSCS, but distinctive. And we also, about 30 years ago, set up our own apprenticeship training provider, which is now an independent charity called JTL, which trains about a third of all the electrical apprentices in England. One other organisation to mention, because it might crop up here and again in the conversation, we also have our own skills partnership. So as a sector, we sit completely outside the Construction Industry Training Board. Members don't pay that levy. Obviously, some of them pay the apprenticeship levy. They don't pay any of that levy. So we're kind of self-governing when it comes to things like apprenticeship standards. And as well as being involved in that, the Skills Partnership also does a lot of research, labour market research. And I'll be drawing on some of that research as we speak.
OK, that sounds really good. And so you mentioned that you've got around 100 members in Greater Manchester. From your perspective and from the work that you've done with members, what are the main skills issues that they're reporting to you at the moment?
Well, I don't think, obviously there are some differences from place to place, but I think that the general picture is pretty similar everywhere, which is skill shortages, labour shortages are still pretty much the top issue that our members talk about. Certainly for the last couple of years, it's been the single largest issue that they've identified. You know, beyond, you know, the cost of materials and availability of materials and other things that have happened with Ukraine and so on, labour is the prime issue that most of them mention. And it's not just it's an inconvenience, it's actually a barrier to growth. Because as you'll know from the fact that you prioritised it as part of the local skills improvement plan, electrical contractors, electricians and other people working for them are pretty essential to things like net zero, a lot of the smart technologies that we all want to see. Plus, of course, other more traditional areas just like basic housing and things like that. So the fact that there is that issue is obviously of broader importance. I mean, just a couple of things with regard to, you know, Greater Manchester. Greater Manchester has a below average population of electricians, below average for England. You have one electrician for every 368 people. Now, the average in England is one in 300. And I would have thought for an economy as large and as diverse and dynamic as Manchester, with all of the demands for the things that I mentioned earlier, that does seem probably low. Apprentice recruitment, it's not bad. We reckon you need to recruit about 5% of your workforce a year as apprentices. It seems high, but that's the sustainable level. Manchester tends to dip a bit below that. So you've got not a huge population of electricians, and you're not quite maintaining the levels of recruitment that you need to keep things sort of more or less steady state. So that's some of the big picture stuff. In terms of some of the specifics, and I'm sure Matt will be able to talk about some of these in more detail, but certainly the profile and attractiveness of the occupation, the way it's presented in schools and in careers advice and guidance, I think that's something which we feel as an industry can be improved. We've also got sort of a leaky or even broken pipeline. I mean, I mentioned to you, you know, apprentice recruitment isn't bad, but, you know, there are many, many people who never even get to become an apprentice. If you look at the proportions of people in Manchester who are studying an electrical course full time in college, the numbers of them is four times higher than the number of apprentice starts you've got in Manchester. Then you look at those people once they finish their qualification in college, only about 10% of them ever actually progress into an apprenticeship. So 90% of them, well, we don't know what happens to them, but they're not certainly progressing into the apprenticeship, which is what, as a young person, you would need to do in order to qualify as an electrician. Also, in terms of a bit of a leaky pipeline, we're losing about 35% of the people who start an apprenticeship. So, you know, the dropout rate is higher than we would like. A couple of other things. I think sometimes employers don't feel that colleges give them access to learners in the way that they would like to spot new talent. And also, it doesn't all end, you know, when you qualify as an electrician or a plumber or a heating engineer. And we feel that there probably needs to be more attention, both from the industry and also from education providers locally, at those progression routes at level four, level five, level six. So in our sector, you know, building controls, design, project management, if it can be made easier to assist people in progressing in that way, A, we become more productive, but B, of course, we become more attractive to people who are looking to progress above and beyond that initial qualification. So those are the sorts of things that we get feedback on.
Okay, interesting. So Matt, you are one of those actual real life employers operating in Greater Manchester. Do you want to start by telling us a bit about the 24/7 group and the sort of work that you do?
Yeah, certainly. So 24/7 group, we are primarily made up of
five other companies currently. We are registered or known as now a multidiscipline engineering company. So we were M&E and we've progressed that because we now have, within our group, we have steel fabrication, we have obviously electrical, we have mechanical, we also have a renewables company. So we have quite a few different aspects of what we do. And in terms of apprentices, we're seeing it not just, and just because of this, I've had conversations with the other companies, we're seeing it even to the levels of welders. That's a struggle because, again, it's a trade that's not very attractive, I suppose. So we do work up and down the country. We work for one of the biggest UK retailers, looking after their stores, building new and maintaining. And we also, we do quite a lot of work for some cold storage companies. Again, all electrical, mechanical, we do design. We hold the whole package, I suppose, is the way we sell ourselves.
Brilliant. So listening to Andrew there and some of the issues that he mentioned, are these some of the things that are quite prevalent in your business as well?
Yeah, I think a lot of the problems, a lot of what Andrew said is exactly what we're finding. I think the biggest problem for us is because we are a company that's working up and down the country. We are based in Manchester, so we are, you know, primarily a Manchester company, but we work up and down. So taking an apprentice at 16 down to Bognor Regis, for an example, is impossible, especially when we've got a day release or block release. Definitely some of the issues that's kind of where we're stuck, I suppose, in an industry that, yes, we know we need more skills. We know we need more people within this industry. We need more learners doing it. And the best way to do that is getting them out with these experienced workers and learning from them. Again, we're finding that really difficult. And I suppose the access to this as well and understanding what the best way of moving forward with it is, because it's good that we're talking about it, which, as Andrew said a few years ago, I went to the ECA and we all spoke about it. And it was my first outing with the ECA, but nothing seems to be happening. Now, all of a sudden, things seem to start moving. So some of the figures that Andrew was giving there, we were at an ECA meeting last week and I heard some of these figures. And to be honest, it's quite shocking for an area of the country that's primarily industrial. We've got some of the lowest figures. And that's the surprise for me as to where we are in our, you know, in our local area.
Yeah, and I guess when you take on apprentices, that's a way of getting skills into the company and a way of training people up so that you've got the skills pipeline there for the future. So when you don't have these skills coming through or you're particularly short of various skills, what's the impact of that on your business?
The impact is, I suppose, is it's put heavily on the current employment. So the staff we have now, they've got to put the extra efforts in, because I think, as again, we have a lot of excellent, you would say, are electricians, but not qualified. So we call effectively a labourer, which these could be some of these people that Andrew's, or the 90% that Andrew alluded to, that are dropping out and not completing that course. And are some of the employers to blame for that, possibly, keeping that cheap labour? But if we're doing them an injustice. It would be good to know where that 90% is going. And is there something that we can make more attractive to bring those within our industry and build them up? Because I think, pay scales is always going to be a problem. You get someone who's 18 or 19, who's done 3 years at college and then tell them they've got to do more training. They're on a, you come out of school and you want to earn money, you get to college level now, which is 18-19, and it's never more appealing to be earning money, because you want to go out, you want to drive your car, and these things have an impact on people. So again, I think that the issues that we're seeing with the skill shortage is exactly that. The jobs are taking longer, we're putting more on our engineers that we have, and we're using more labor rather than actual skill. We're not training new up for us, which is key, really.
Yeah, so there aren't enough people coming through to sort of fill those gaps that you've got. And do you have much experience of working with colleges or training providers to get the skills you need? Have they been responsive to what you need?
Yeah, so the project side of the business, I'm primarily on our facility management. So for my side, apprentices are quite difficult because we have reactive engineers, but we do have trainers, apprentices, sorry, on the other side of the business, and we take on as regularly as we can. But again, talking to my MD, his big issue is that what you get from an apprentice to what we get as a help in that training provider, like I say, again, it's working away a lot, is not enough. We'd love to take more apprentices on, but there's just not that support, or maybe it's there, and again, it's not being fed into these businesses like ourselves enough to give us that knowledge to go, know where to go or what direction to go into. We've recently fell upon a conversation with Salford College, who we're now looking at bringing in on a, I think it's generally a 6 month gap from college. They come in to learn skills, and that's primarily project managers, estimators, but still within the industry. So not direct electricians, which is what we'd like. But again, it's something that was there that we never knew about, which obviously supports us because it brings us people in the business, and obviously potentially somebody who's learning who at some point may want that job, and we may be that company that they want to come to. And again, it's finding out these avenues that we can go down that I don't think they're published enough for us to gain that access. I think that's probably an easier way of putting it.
Yeah, so it's knowing where to look. If that provision is available, it's being able to find it. Is there anything else that can be done to sort of help alleviate some of these problems, do you think?
I just think more information. I think more access to, you know, more access in terms of getting people into college or getting people into the apprenticeship scheme. I think for me personally, that's got to start school. You know, when I was in school, you didn't have to stay on till you're 18. I know they can go straight into an apprenticeship, but you also had careers advice. You also had generally your parents saying, get a trade, go and do a trade, whatever you do, get a trade, and you'll always fall back on that. I don't think that's happening now. Is that because of an industry we're not selling ourselves well enough as to what the industry actually has to offer these days? It's not just as simple as putting a socket on a wall anymore. There's so much more that anybody can get involved in that's really exciting, to be fair, and it's a must. This net zero, it's not, you know, we're not playing at it. We have to get there. It's not a choice. And to do that, we need these people, experienced people, understanding the industry and bringing that into us, definitely.
Yeah, okay. So back to you, Andrew. You've sort of talked a little bit about the figures for Greater Manchester in terms of the number of apprentices and how we're a bit lower than other areas of the country. In terms of the skill shortages, are there similar issues in other parts of the country?
I don't know any part of the country where our members are saying, you know, we're it's all hunky dory here. If it's not the quantity of people, it's the quality of people. If it's not the quality of people, it's the degree to which people are able to be flexible. Everywhere has similar issues. But there are big differences. I mean, you talk about the sort of population of electricians. I don't know whether you're aware the part of England that's got the highest number of electricians for the general population. I don't have got time for to play a guessing game, so I'll tell you, it's Dorset. Dorset.
Really? Dorset. Well done, Dorset.
One in every 150 people in Dorset is an electrician. Now, maybe a retired electrician or a semi-retired electrician enjoying the scenery. I don't know, but Dorset. And to be fair, of course, Dorset does have, and the West Country in general, massive demand on solar PV, particularly the larger scale solar PV work. So that could be the answer on that. Surrey, I mean, to make Manchester feel a bit happier, Surrey's got the lowest population of electricians. One electrician for every 750 people. So unfortunately, all these city types wanting sophisticated smart technologies for their enormous houses and so on, tough luck, I'm afraid. It's going to be quite a long wait. So There are big differences. There's also big differences in terms of apprentice recruitment. I think I said earlier, 5% is at least a sustainable figure. You don't have to go too far to see parts of the world where they exceed that. So both Lancashire and Cheshire and Warrington are 6.5%. So 6.5% of your existing workforce in a year recruited as apprentices. But then there are other parts of the country you're looking at below 3%, below 2.5%, where it really is a bad. So, I mean, I think probably what you've got in common with some areas, particularly the big metropolitan areas, is this big imbalance between the numbers of people sitting in colleges full time as opposed to the numbers actually then progressing. So I say Manchester, it's about 4 times the number of apprentice starts. Liverpool, it's also around 4 times. So I'm afraid you guys are more or less on a par. I hope that's not too disappointing. West Midlands, it's worse. It's 5.5 times. And you probably can guess where the worst place in the country is in terms of the imbalance.
You tell us.
Begins with L and it's not Leeds. It's London. Oh,
yeah.
It's London. 8 times. And in fact, in some boroughs in London, it's 200 times. There's a borough in northwest London, I won't mention it, it's Enfield, where 3 apprentice starts, 600 enrolments onto electrical courses in the local colleges. So raises all sorts of issues, of course, as to why our college is not delivering what industry actually wants. That's probably, probably a question for another time, but yeah, it is an issue. I mean, the other thing on the positive side, I think what we've noticed, and this kind of follows up from what Matt said, there's been a lot of talking and moaning about all of these things, but nobody's really known what to do about it. I would say a major step forward has been the greater regional focus. I do think across the board, these big metropolitan areas, which yes, do have the biggest problems in many ways. The fact that you've got combined authorities and others looking at this, along with the Chambers of Commerce and the local skills improvement plans. So yeah, I mean, the GLA and Business London, we're talking West Midlands Combined Authority, West of England Combined Authority and Business West. And of course, Greater Manchester Combined Authority and yourselves. And in fact, we got our introduction to the Combined Authority from your colleague, Chris Fletcher, which we're very grateful for. So things are moving. The fact that there is a focus on the local situation, the regional situation, although these are national problems, universal problems, we know you're only going to get them solved by looking at the specifics of the region. Or the locality, because that's where the delivery is taking place. That's where the employers are, and that's where the training providers are, and that's where all the other stakeholders are as well, including the people providing careers advice. So we think boiling it down, reducing it down to those smaller areas gives us much greater scope actually to progress.
Absolutely. And I know the ECA has an education and skills agenda to help businesses like Matt's. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, some of it's just part of that service provision that I described. So we provide guidance on issues around qualifications, issues around employing people, and of course, including employing apprentices. So there are guides on it. There are templates. There are, if there are problems, there's a helpline to help resolve those problems just in any way that you would with another kind of employee. I mean, in terms of other things, I've mentioned the sort of the representation, the influencing side of things. I mean, we've had a long tradition, as I said, electricians like to control as much as possible the training landscape. So we've had a long tradition of inputting into apprenticeships, qualifications, work very closely with the likes of City and Guild, EAL, VPEC, and so on. I mean, what we've done more recently, though, is we've become a little bit more vociferous about what we see as some of the policy issues and the policy barriers. So on upskilling, for example, We do feel that things like skills boot camps, the structure and format's too inflexible. People like Matt, people like other members we've got, if they want an upskilling qualification, they want that qualification, which could be 8 hours, it could be 20 hours, it could be 50 hours. But of course, with a boot camp, it has to be 60 hours. And so that is an inflexibility. We are getting a bit more controversial. We are saying that apprenticeships in particular need to be properly funded, and we don't feel they are at the moment. That creates issues, obviously, in terms of the ability of colleges in particular to recruit and retain the right staff. But also we feel that if we are going to target additional support to employers, maybe the particular group we need to focus on are the very smallest employers. I mean, Matt's described some of the issues that he's got with a firm his size, but at least there is a structure there. There are supervisors. There are other people who could help support an apprentice through the process. That's not really the case once you get down to a micro business of 10 people, 5 people. There's not a lot of spare capacity there. So if you wanted to provide an additional support, including assurance that if problems come along, you are going to have that support, then that's probably the group who need it most. And also this issue of progression, or rather the lack of progression, particularly from the college courses. So we've wrapped all those up into a charter. We call it the Recharging Electrical Skills Charter, which we launched in Parliament just before Christmas last year. And we're pursuing that. We're continuing to pursue that, and we will be pursuing that in the run-up to the general election. But finally, and just coming back to the earlier point about the importance of regions and localities, because we feel that we're only actually going to get answers and solutions at a local level, we're currently talking to our members about the best mechanism for that. And we've come up with an idea, and we're calling it a Training and Careers Alliance, which is effectively, if you like, a partnership between a group of employers in a locality and various other stakeholders. That could be the local college, it could be an independent training provider, it could be both. And really focused around upping the numbers, upping the quality, addressing the specific challenges of that area. And of course, to be honest, if we can get others involved, such as the combined authority, such as the chamber, industry clients and so on backing it, then you've got the recipe there for actually coming up with some real actions that will have some real impact, which, as Matt says, up till now, we haven't really known how to do it. But I think with that regional, local focus, I think that is a potential mechanism.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay, well, let's bring Subra in. So Subra's been waiting very patiently, listening to what everybody's been saying. Based on what you've heard, Subra, are these issues that Andrew and Matt have talked about, are they mirrored in the data that we've found while we've been doing the research for the LSIP?
Yeah, thank you, Jo. And I would agree. I think most of the points that Andrew and Matt have mentioned have found resonance in the research that we did for the LSIP. But let me just pick up on a few different points. Number one, it's the general shortage of labor versus the shortage of skills. We know that there is a shortage of electricians and people who are qualified in the electrical trades. That has been expressed by businesses time and again. We did, of course, have that finding during the LSIP research, but Joe, you'll remember we did the construction pipeline analysis, and we have repeated that a few times. And one of the traits that we look at is around electrical traits. this goes back to many years ago. So there have been ongoing shortages for quite some time. The nuance that we found within the LSIP is actually quite interesting, because there is shortage for people who are qualified across the range of electrical qualifications. And of course, we have to make a big distinction between industrial electrical trades versus the domestic electrical trades. And that is not to say there is a shortage in one but not the other. There are shortages in both. But that is where the skills aspects come into the picture. So even if colleges are churning out lots and lots of people who are getting qualified or acquiring NVQs and similar qualifications on the area general, they seem to be focused more and more on household and domestic electricals. So there is hardly any training provision on the industrial electrical side. And that is something that we have to tackle. So there is a labor shortage issue. There is a skill shortage issue in terms of the specific training that is available. Matt also mentioned areas like welding. And it is interesting that welding was the number one occupation which was reported as a shortage across all of the various occupations in the LSIP, not just in any particular sector, across all of the sectors. If we look at the frequency with which welding was mentioned, that was number one. And we also engaged with businesses who are working on pipelines and utility companies, et cetera, and they reported the same thing, that there is such a severe shortage of welders. But what that shortage also means is that if the workforce is willing to be mobile, then there are opportunities elsewhere in the country where the rates are much higher. So somebody who is who is qualified and is set up in Manchester, they might actually get a job that pays much higher. And it was mentioned, and Andrew and Matt, you can confirm this, that highly skilled, well experienced welders can claim £400-£500 a day. So that's the level of demand that is there in those trades. The challenges with apprenticeships is also quite interesting, because it is a bridge that does need to be crossed. We have learning providers and colleges say that there are some challenges in getting employers interested, and equally there are challenges from the employer side. That is not new. We have known about this. But I think we have to get that dialogue going between employers and training providers to actually identify what the challenges are. And then we as an anchor institution can actually broker some of those conversations and help get those challenges solved.
Yeah, so that's all part of the work of the LSIP as well, isn't it? You know, getting employers more engaged with the skills system and, you know, vice versa. So what can businesses do if they're affected by skills shortages, struggling to recruit the people they need?
Kind of a shameless plug-in, first of all, Joe. First thing, I think, is to engage with us as part of the LSIP so that we can identify the requirement but also document it. And that's more than a simple plug-in, because the LSIP has been set up to be the defining plan for local skills across different parts of the country. Now, of course, we will find, as Andrew has rightly mentioned, that many of these trades are in shortage in other parts of the country as well, right? But we have a shortage in Greater Manchester. We need to make sure that the training system in Greater Manchester is responsive to the needs of employers, that there is enough training provision in, that there is enough training provision on the specific skill sets that the employers are actually requiring for people in. So that is the first thing, you know, it's engage with us so that we can identify those requirements, document it. And equally then we can take it back to both DfE, but also Greater Manchester Combined Authority, so that we can start looking at what options we can offer in terms of providing training. Boot camps have already been mentioned. Now, the interesting thing is within GMCA, because of some of the commissioning powers and the control that GMCA have over the adult education budget, we can look at ad hoc training, which might actually meet the requirements of employers, which are not necessarily in a particular model, but there is that flexibility, right? So unless employers actually engage with us and tell us about the challenges, we can't do things like that. And equally, we do have good relations with many of the learning providers, both independent training providers and also the colleges. And this is intelligence we can actually pass back to them so that they can start refining their curricula to meet these needs of employers.
Okay, that's brilliant. Well, I think that's probably all we've got time for. Thank you so much, Matt, Andrew and Subra. That's been a really fascinating discussion. Matt's off to open a branch in Surrey. I think the rest of us are off to retrain as welders. And we'll put all the information that you've heard about in the description of this podcast. So how to contact us about skills shortages. We'll put the information about the recharging electrical skills charter that Andrew mentioned in the description for the podcast. And we'll be back with another one soon. Thank you very much for listening. Bye for now.